Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Welcome. hey, welcome back to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm here with, as usual, slash always, my good friend Ben Sternke.
Hello.
And also a guest today on the podcast, a friend of ours. She is a senior pastor of First Church of the Nazarene, Pasadena, also called NazPaz?
Paznaz.
Tara Beth Leach. Tara Beth, we met several years ago at one of the smallest church conferences that has ever been put on. Is that right?
Yes.
Do you remember
this? I remember it well. Yeah, actually, that's where Emboldened all started.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about that. At that little conference?
IVP was there.
Okay.
This is between Tara Beth and I.
I know. Is this? Can our listeners not know? Is it a secret conference? Is that why it was so small?
It was very tiny. It was called a Missional Learning Commons. It was in Westmont, Illinois, which our friend David calls the missional mecca of the universe.
It used to be Fort Wayne back when I was hosting it, when I lived there.
That's when he was trying to flatter you. But now
he
lives in Westmont, and he's really excited about it. So we did this conference. Tell me how you wrote this book, Emboldened, which is about empowering women in ministry. But how did it start at that little conference?
Well, at the time, I had been blogging a lot about this. It was a little bit of a fire in my heart. And so I had written several blog posts, and InterVarsity Press was there at the conference because Mandy Smith was launching her book, The Vulnerable Pastor.
Yes. Yeah.
And Mandy was a new friend of mine, and it's amazing what she did, but she barely knew me, but yet she offered up an opportunity for me to connect with Al from InterVarsity Press. And so we were sitting all together at lunch, and she said, Al, Tara Beth has a book idea. You two should talk. And then she got up and walked away.
Yes.
It's kind of like in, high school when you're trying to hook two people up,
Right.
And she just did one of those, and we got to talking, and Al was really excited about it and said, sounds great. Write up a proposal and send it over.
That's
that
awesome.
Is where it all began, that conference.
Amazing. Really I knew cool. you win. Mandy's also going to be on the podcast in a few weeks.
Yeah.
She's a dear friend as well.
Mm-hmm. I love her so much.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. And I had no idea that she did that. Super cool.
That's really cool.
So we want to have a conversation today, Tara Beth. You are a senior pastor. You've been senior pastor for 2 years now. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, 2 years. At a congregation, 30 or 40,000 people. Is that how many?
Close. It's 120,000.
Amazing. Nobody knows about it.
You're only off by a factor of four.
Yeah.
So you're a senior pastor of this church, and I just want to know, is being a woman senior pastor as easy as everybody assumes it is?
No. In fact, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard. It's amazing that I get a seat at the table.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, getting at this a seat at the table is just the first step.
Yeah.
To the process. I am grateful every day. I have a pinch myself moment constantly, and I have a, oh my gosh, this is so hard moment constantly.
Yeah.
Because arriving to the table is just the first step.
Right. Then you have to actually reckon with the self that's at the table. You talk in your book about this imposter that we have inside of us. And you speak from sort of your experience as a woman. But as I read that part in your book, I could totally relate as a man. Like, I think the imposter, nothing has seized you except for what is common to humanity, right? I've been a pastor of a local church for 15 years and didn't envision this to be a role that I would have, but I've been in groups where I've discipled groups of women, like on staffs or other places, and I come upon this, like we call them kairos moments, these things that stop me up short, and that is a lot of women that I've talked to. I even got an email last month from a friend of ours at another church. Mm-hmm. Women have a really hard time with the word leader. What I hear is, you can't use that word with me because I'm not a leader. Have you run into that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it has everything to do with imposter syndrome and just the social constructs, that the evangelical church has created. Mm. And even just Christian culture has created. We've created these constructs where, it's a manly thing. To be a leader. And not only that, because, and we talked about this before we were recording, but we talked about this anemic imagination that the church has. And so because of that anemic imagination, it's not just men that are, I guess, diseased, if you will, with that anemic imagination, but it's women. Yeah. We have difficulty imagining ourselves in roles that we've never seen other women in. Or we've seen very few women in. And so if we've never seen another female leader and we only see male leaders, well, then I can't be a leader because I've never seen that before.
Yeah. So it's almost like it doesn't even matter if theologically you might be on the page that, okay, women can be, you know, do this. But there's a lack of, like you said, this anemic imagination that's directly related to whether or not I've seen this lived out in an embodied way in front of me. That it be, and if I haven't seen it, then I can't really be it. That's the feeling.
Absolutely. I mean, there's that you know, phrase that culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Right.
I think in the same way, I mean, culture eats imagination. It even eats theology for breakfast.
Yes.
Culture is a powerful force. And so we can have a theology, but ultimately, at the end of the day, culture is powerful.
Yes.
Yeah. I've actually heard that exact phrase you said, Tara Beth, when I've had sort of my hand on my back, and my hand on someone's back saying, hey, you can do this. I believe in you. Let's go for this. And they say, Matt, I appreciate everything you've done for me, but I can only get so much from you. This is for women, because I can't see myself in you.
Right.
This need to see yourself. Could you talk a little bit about who's been that leader for you? And what did you see that allowed you to come into your calling and vocation as you are now?
Yeah. So my story is probably not the norm, because when it comes to pastoring, in my early days, I didn't have any models. In fact, the first woman that I ever heard preach was Beth Moore. And so she did begin to expand my imagination in really beautiful ways. And then after that, I would attend women's conferences and I would hear women Bible teachers. And they were powerful. They were anointed, gifted teachers. The only difference was they were teachers just to women. And so Early on, I didn't have any imagination whatsoever of a woman in ministry pastoring men as well as women. The first female senior pastor I ever met was Mandy Smith, and that was, I don't know, 6 years ago at the Missio Alliance conference, and she was hosting the conference, emceeing it. And I, every time she got up to speak, I just wept. Yeah. I just wept because seeing her lead was just ripping my mind and my imagination open in really beautiful and wholly chaotic ways.
Yes.
Because she was not just an MC up there, but she was shepherding us throughout the conference. Mm. She was tending to the spirit as she was tending just to the room and the way that the spirit was moving all of us. And it was really incredible for me to see someone shepherd people in the ways that Mandy Smith does.
Wow.
Yeah. So it takes it from this conceptualization of, oh, I suppose I could be a leader, to you're actually participating in a space where someone's leading you, even like Mandy Smith emceeing or Beth Moore teaching. And you get caught up in that a little bit. It like awakens or gives you permission or opens you up to a new possibility you didn't see before.
Yes. Mm. And Beth Moore did that for me. And it, you know, it took me on a little bit of a confusing journey for me for a while. So I knew that I was called into ministry at 16 years old. And I talk about this story in Embolden, so we don't need to go back to that. But I knew it that I was called. I just didn't know what it looked like.
Yeah.
And so really, if I were to sum up my journey in one sentence, it would be, I just figured out or learned through the empowering presence of the Spirit, how to put one foot in front of the other.
Yes.
And oftentimes putting one foot in the front of the other was a blind step of faith because I didn't have any role models. But at the same time, people like Beth Moore, every time I heard her speak or preach, she was awakening stuff within me. And so there were seasons where I thought, okay, I'm going to be a Bible teacher someday, just like Beth Moore. And I'm going to do women's conferences and I'm going to do retreats. Cause I knew that God had called me to teach and preach.
Yeah.
And with Beth Moore being my, I guess, only model at the time, that's what I began to imagine.
Yeah.
For myself.
Yeah. This is important, Tara Beth. One of the things we talk about on our podcast a lot is that God cares about it more than we do. And what I hear in your story is that you felt called to this vocation, and rather than God saying, okay, Tara Beth, I've given you this calling, now go figure it out and make it happen, this one step in front of the other is just this momentary, particular, granular obedience, trusting yes. that you're being led forward into something you can't quite see, but if you take that next step, eventually you get over the lake of Gennesaret, right? But you have to take that first step and just focus on the obedience of that step. And it sounds like that was how you, the Lord awakened your imagination.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there were so many times where, of course, like we all do, we tell God what the next 20 steps are going to look like.
Right.
Yeah. Ben does it a lot.
And yeah. Yeah.
I do too.
You know, and for me, a planner and especially a dreamer, I would dream out those 20 steps. But the way that the holy chaos of the Spirit works is that those next faithful steps aren't always what we imagine them to be.
Yeah, I want to return to something you talked about earlier about just the constructs of leadership we have and how in our Western sort of evangelical imaginations, those are typically culturally male and how those inhibit or sometimes eliminate just the possibility that a woman can lead, not just women, but a woman can lead a group of men and women together. What were some of those the constructs in particular that you've had to maybe challenge or overcome, or that you've seen are way more culturally defined than perhaps biblically or faithfully defined?
Yeah. So I mean, recently coming to PASNAS, one of the most common pushbacks that I heard from people was that I was a mom of small children. When I came to PASNAS, I had a preschooler at the time and a kindergartner at the time. They're now kindergarten and second grade. But people just could not even fathom bringing in a mother with small children at home. And a lot of it was just the fear. Could she do it? Could she handle this huge job while caring for small children at home? And the congregation just never, and when I say the congregation, I mean those that were pushing back, just never dawned on them that I had a husband that was very involved. And it never dawned on them that the former senior pastor and senior pastors in the past had children, the age of my children. And so those are just one of the constructs. I mean, and of course, there are a lot of differences in the ways that mothering and fathering is sometimes lived out. But one of the joys that Jeff and I have had of being at PASNAS is giving this imagination for what an egalitarian marriage looks like and what it means to parent together, and really kind of flip some of these constructed gender roles upside down. So I would say that's one of the ones that really stand out the most, and most recently as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you didn't say this, but what also occurs to me is if people question whether a mother with a kindergartner and a second grader could actually lead a church, like, people don't understand how badass moms are. You know what I mean? Like, like, it takes a lot of work to, I mean, I just think about the work my wife does, and not just the administrative work, but actually the relational shepherding skill. I mean, if you're a good mom, chances are you have a lot of the skills you need to be a good pastor.
You
know, and Cheryl Sandberg and Lean In, I think it was her that talked about this. I'm pretty sure she talked about the maternal style of leadership, and how that is lived out in a work or leadership setting. You know, a mother has the, I guess, capacity, much like a father, but to nurture a people and then push them when they need to be pushed. And she describes it really beautifully. I'm not even doing it justice, but that was something that really resonated with me and something I really embrace as a leader, a very maternal style of leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, speaking as a guy, I remember being in seminary. I'm speaking as a guy. I just want everybody to know that.
Right now I've got my guy hat on.
I'll put my guy hat on.
I'm putting my man hat on.
No, I mean, I took this leadership test in seminary. And I scored really low on sort of the dominant constructs that a man needs to lead as pertains by this, you know, fairly standard evangelical seminary. And I remember my teacher sitting down with me and telling me, hey, you'll probably never be a senior pastor because you don't have, you know, basically what he's saying is you're not a type A, like hard charging, you know, high D on the disc evaluator. You're not an Enneagram 8. You're not going to take over the world. So you probably should just be a youth pastor, you know, or a missions pastor or something. And I remember thinking, like, I internalized that as I'm deficient based upon these constructs of this masculine shaped sort of Western leadership. So it doesn't just do bad work in women's lives. I think it also, just speaking autobiographically, has done bad work in mine.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, toxic masculinity is a thing. And, you know, I wrote a piece in Christianity Today 2 years ago in an article called I Don't Fit the Senior Pastor Mold.
I remember that.
And I talked about this real maternal style of leadership. And I heard from more men than I did women on that one.
Really? Like, positively.
Yes. Like,
thank you for saying
this. Yes, saying, I don't fit that mold either. Yeah. Thank you for sharing this. Men that have nurturing styles of leadership that aren't top-down or dominant, or the man that doesn't just walk into a room and take up a lot of space. Yeah. And we've got to begin, for men and women, expanding that imagination for the church of what this can look like. We have just, in a way that has been harmful, boxed in what we consider to be a leader.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So this, you know, women entering into leadership provides us then, as the church, I think, with this opportunity, you know, this it's a crucible for sure, but an opportunity to say, hey, instead of just assuming, okay, theologically, this is okay. And so come on in. But basically underneath that assumption is come on in the way that we've always done this. Like these new instincts coming to the forefront strike me as a gift to the church to be able to evaluate, reevaluate, like, wait, why have we been doing it this way in the first place?
Right.
What's going on here? How can we discern, you know, the work of the Spirit in our midst in terms of what Jesus is calling us to?
Yeah, and I think we've got to do a better job in the church of naming what those cultural constructs are. And this is a huge and important conversation even with race. We just have a really hard time parsing out or sorting out what's culture and what's not.
Yeah.
And what's been toxic and harmful to the bride of Christ and what's not.
Yes.
I agree, Tara Beth. I think I noticed for me that I remember the first time I could see what I saw with. The first time that I was able to look at my construct rather than just look through or with my construct, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yes,
and
absolutely.
It made sense. And it almost felt like, I remember being like an 8-year-old where I remember having an empathetic connection with how somebody else was feeling. And I remember it being like this moment of like, I'm inhabiting somebody else's experience. Like I'm actually, I'm on the Fowler stages of growth or whatever the, you know, the Maslow stages of growth. But it was almost like that for me. I was almost like, oh, I think I get this. And so many people I meet, I mean, this is my life on Twitter really, is like, I want to talk about what we see with, and people just want to argue the details, right? So with race, I want to say, hey, like there may be some white privilege here, and somebody's like, well, I wasn't born with $1 million, or I have a black friend, so I'm not racist. And I'm like, that's not
right.
What we're talking about here. Like, that's not what I want to talk about here. One other thing I want to chat about a little bit is friendships. I'm struck by how, just because of, you know, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Tara Beth. I'm struck with how most Christians have better male-female friendships outside of the church than inside of the church.
Absolutely. In fact, this is something that has been on my heart quite a bit. And I think that we have taken some major steps backwards. I'm so thankful for the Me Too movement. So, so important. I am at the same time devastated by the Me Too movement because of the way it has exposed the Bride of Christ. But also at the same time, thank God it's exposing some of the abuse of power that we have been seeing.
Yes.
And one of the ones that I've had the hardest time with is the Bill Hybels situation. Because Bill Hybels was one of the few megachurch egalitarian leaders. Okay. And this is this conversation about men and women interacting with one another within the church is so important. And one that I think that we were making some really good gaining some really good ground on. And talking about, you know, this Billy Graham rule, for example, talking about healthy boundaries, unhealthy boundaries, talking about the way some of our really strict boundaries has sidelined women. So, and I felt like we were gaining good ground. And then the Bill Hybels thing situation happens, and then other moral failures happened. And the knee-jerk response with the church is, well, if he would have just followed the Billy Graham rule,
right,
this wouldn't have happened. Even the elders at Willow Creek, you know, talked about this. Bill Hybels talked about this. And which by the way, is really just mind-blowing to me because I happen to be friends with people who have worked there.
Yeah.
And the Billy Graham rule, I talked about this with Willow Creek people several years ago. The Billy Graham rule was never a thing at Willow. I knew about Bill Hybels meeting staff in restaurants. So for them to bring up the Billy Graham rule now, it just hurts my head. But anyway, you know, so the knee-jerk response is, well, if we would have just had better boundaries, if we would have just followed the Billy Graham rule, but boundaries is not the issue. The issue is a lack of accountability, formation, And of course, it's a heart issue. Yeah. Of course, I'm all for boundaries. I would not hang out with a man in my hotel room.
What about his private yacht? Would you do that?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do that either. Yeah.
Right. Boundaries are good, but
yeah.
Boundaries are really good, and it's good that we talk about it, but not in such a way where we just knee-jerk respond, because now I am nervous about the way the church is responding to the Me Too movement. Whereas instead, I would rather see us press in and say, let's reclaim this imagination of men and women co-laboring together. Let's talk about what that kingdom imagination is first.
Yes.
And then let's back into it. Yes, let's talk about boundaries, but we need to reclaim an imagination. We need to reclaim that vision of men and women instead of just responding and say, oh, we need stricter boundaries.
Right.
And so my heart is just hurting, and I still experience this today. I hear it all the time. I just reached out to a new pastor in town down the road, and I asked him if he would like to do coffee. And he wasn't comfortable meeting with me for coffee, another pastor, you know. And it's just like things like that where I just kind of want to hit my head against the wall, where we are just responding in fear. And what that communicates to me and what that communicates to women is that I fear you more than I love you and care about as my sister in Christ.
Wow.
And I fear your body, and I fear well, you know, what this could communicate. And so my hope for the church is that we would press in and reclaim that vision first.
To move forward into something like a positive vision of something that we're going for, rather than retreating into stricter boundaries to avoid a bad thing that we don't want to happen again.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes.
It's almost like, managing badness won't lead us into love.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like
Go figure.
Yeah. Or like not sinning won't get us closer to the kingdom.
Right.
Right. Yes. Tereth, what you said, that the just sort of the avoidance of women, especially as with men who have any kind of responsibility or authority in a church, their avoidance of women sends messages to women about their bodies, about who they are in relationship with the body of Christ. And what you said was so powerful, and I don't want to try to quote it because I'll misquote it, but I think that in large part, it took me a long time to realize that even though I wanted to see women empowered in ministry, my reticence of having healthy friendships with them in ministry actually worked against them ever having a place, like you said at the beginning, at the table.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And that was even early on coming to Paz Naz. We had families leave the church early on. And one of the things that I heard was women, even women, could not handle their husbands watching a female pastor preach. And it is this hypersexualization that we have done to the women's body that there's even a fear of a man watching a woman preach that he could not. And here's the toxic masculinity. Right. I think much more highly of my brothers than thinking that they can't control themselves while a woman is preaching. Right. You know, and so it's just, it's heartbreaking. And this is a really important conversation that the church has got to learn how to have.
Yes.
Selah. Let's just moment of silence for that. That's so important. Ugh. Well, Tereth, I wonder if you have navigating sort of your own imposter syndrome inside, navigating a lack of imagination for what it looks like to lead, not as a man would lead, not pretending to be a man, not hiding as a woman, but stepping fully into who God's called you to be, and then pressing, you know, you have to continually gracefully press through, like, the sexism that's inherent with your peers from other pastors and from congregants. We have a lot of women that we train and that we that are part of our community. What are you learning that you can pass on to them as they learn to step in to the places you are?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things I'm learning is that we've got to figure out a way to have these conversations and to still continue to lead and pastor in a way that isn't leading from bitterness, anger, and hurt. And instead, leading in a way that is casting this vision, even when there's pushback, even when there's hurt. Is there a way for us to lead in a way that is winsome?
Yeah.
And of course, it sucks. Of course, it hurts. Of course, there are times where I just want to throw stuff against the wall. But at the same time, I am at Pesnez, for example, and same with women who are pastoring. We are pastoring because we want to pastor. We are leading because we so believe in the mission of God. We believe of what it means to participate in this mission. This is why we're doing it. We are not doing it because we want to prove a point, because women want to take over the world or take over the church. It's another thing I hear a lot. Mm. But that's not why we're doing it. So if that's not why we're doing it, then my encouragement is for us as women and men to lead in such a way that is giving our folks that imagination rather than leading from a place of anger, bitterness, and hurt, which, oh, believe me, I know how hard that is. I know. Oh, my goodness, I know. But I have seen us gain more ground when we don't lead from that place of bitterness and anger, and we instead learn how to put one foot in front of the other, take that next faithful step, and lead in such a way that gives our people that vision and lead winsomely.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah,
that's a good word. Well, I appreciate your leadership, Tara Beth. Your book, Emboldened, was administered to me. I learned from it a great deal. If you're out there, and I recommend it to men. Mm. We were at a conference in Chicago a couple weeks ago, and we led this little group, Ben and I did together, and this woman came up to us, and she said, hey, I just so appreciate the way you guys led that group. I've been in groups before, mixed gender groups, where I feel shut down mm-hmm. and silenced. And she said, what typically happens is men center themselves in those groups. And she said, I felt like you guys did a good job of holding this space open. And it occurred to me right then and there, like, I don't need to hear from dudes that I'm a good leader. I need to hear from women that I'm a good leader. Like that will make my day. That will make my day. And we need more spaces like that. And we need more cultures like that. And I so appreciate your heart. I appreciate the way you've pastored me and the way you're pastoring our community on this podcast. So thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for having me and creating space to have these conversations.
Yep. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you review podcasts. You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for a future episode. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles that we found interesting or helpful in our work as local pastors and practitioners of discipleship and mission. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.